We've had several conversations on the show about the rewilding of cheetahs, primarily focused on cheetahs leaving South Africa and being sent to new wilderness environments in the likes of Malawi, Zimbabwe and India. But did you know that that process can also happen in the other direction, new cheetah bloodlines being brought into South Africa? Earlier this year, a young Australian cheetah named Edie became the first from her country to make the long trip back to her ancestral home. And she is, as we speak, adjusting to life in the Mziki Private Game Reserve, which is in the Northwest Province, not far from the Pilansberg Reserve. She is part of a wider cheetah metapopulation project that is all about ensuring the long-term survival of the species by promoting healthy genetic diversity. The relocation in this case overseen by an NGO called We Wild Africa. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Project Director Derek Milburn to the show. Derek, great to have you with us. Welcome.
Hi, Pippa. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
It's a pleasure. Let's talk a little bit about Edie, and then if time allows, we'll talk a little bit more about We Wild Africa. But fascinating story this. Edie was born at the Wildcat Conservation Centre in New South Wales, Australia. Now, please explain a little bit about her heritage and what an African wildcat is doing being born in Sydney, Australia.
Yeah, Pippa. So Edie is was the first female cheetah born at the facility in Sydney. And she was brought up at the Wildcat Conservation Centre. And the Wildcat Conservation Centre is a very big advocate of returning cats to their points of origin wherever possible.
Okay.
So Edie came from quite a big enclosure, like a savanna-type enclosure, which Wildcat Conservation has developed for their cheetahs there. And they contacted us probably about a year and a half ago, saying that they would like to bring or at least pilot one of their cheetahs coming back to Africa.
Yeah.
Because as an organization, we've been involved in bringing cheetahs back from Canada to Zimbabwe. We've brought cheetahs from the United Kingdom with the pure objective of firstly bringing unique genetics into the system and also supplementing the population with female cheetahs.
Okay.
And that's basically why EDU was quite important for us. And working with an organization like Wildcat Conservation Centre in Australia was the right link, I think.
So it's fascinating to me that a facility in Australia is kind of almost providing a backup insurance policy for an African cheetah population, if I can call it that, Derek. The idea is we don't want these cats to become extinct in the continent they come from. And even if that means we have to breed them outside and bring them back in later on, isn't it amazing that that can be done? I mean, let's talk a little bit about what it takes to make that possible, because a cheetah born in a captive environment, I think many people would say, how on earth do you ever release them back into the wild? Do you want to tell us a little bit more about how Edie was raised to keep that possibility open?
Sure. So I think there's two issues here. The first is the welfare issue. So we as an organization believe that animals don't really belong in captivity. So firstly, we try and release cats or any animal for that matter of fact out of their captive environment. That's the first thing. So it's a welfare issue.
Yeah.
The second issue is obviously from a population point of view. So I just wanted to clarify that in terms of the purpose. So the process is quite, complex. Firstly, getting the cheetah over from any international destination, especially intercontinental, is quite a process. So I'd say about 80% of the work goes into the planning, the paperwork, motivations, and 20% of it is actually getting the job done and getting the cheetah or any animal onto the aircraft.
Yeah.
So Edie flew on a Qantas aircraft. It was a passenger liner. She was in the hole, and she flew to the sponsored flight thanks to Qantas. She arrived in South Africa, went to Kanga Wildlife Ranch for a quarantine period, and then moved up to Mziki. Now, during that process, there's obviously a few steps that need to be put in place for any cheetah to be rewilded. We've done this with Canadian cheetahs, and we've done this with UK cheetahs, and we've also done this with cheetahs from within South Africa, the captive population.
Yeah.
So the process then is really, firstly, they need to get used to eating venison or game meat, because very often a lot of the captive facilities feed, like, for example, the cheetahs that came from Canada, they're fed minced horse meat. So, you know, we first got to try and get them eating full carcasses and opening carcasses. That's quite a challenge, that's number one. Number two is really getting them to work with fur, ingesting fur, because often they regurgitate fur for the first few weeks. So that's quite a challenge. So that's the key issue, and then trying to get them to hunt eventually. So it's quite a complex process, but we've proven that it is possible. We've released a number of cheetah on that basis.
That's fascinating. I mean, that tells me that there is such a deeply embedded sort of instinct in a wild animal that's never eradicated, even if it's born in a captive environment. Derek, I'm sure others would find it, might expect that a cat born in a captive environment would simply never be able to learn to hunt, to recognize something as prey, to recognize something that might see it as prey, and to have any hope of living in the wild one day. But from what you've described there, would you say there is something just instinctively embedded in them that can be sort of almost reawakened?
Absolutely, without a doubt. And I'll just give you one example of the cheetahs that we brought from Canada to Zimbabwe. It was the first time cheetahs had ever been imported into Zimbabwe from a captive source.
Yeah.
So the two brothers, Kumbi and Jabari, they were taken to Amiri Private Game Reserve or Rana Wildlife and Conservation Sanctuary. And again, they were fed minced horse meat, never seen an impala before. They were playing with a cardboard, there's footage of them playing with a cardboard box in the snow at a zoo in Canada. Oh. We brought them to Zimbabwe, and taught them again how to open carcasses. It took them quite a while. And then we released them from the holding boma into the bigger reserve. And within the first 12 hours, they had killed a male impala, a large ram,
wow,
and a young waterbuck. And since then, we didn't feed them once. So the cheetahs that we released is a long release process that we follow. They're collared with satellite collars so we can find them at any given time. We have full-time monitors monitoring the cheetahs for at least 6 months to make sure that they are safe. And the monitors then, if we see that the cheetahs aren't hunting effectively, we then supplement them until they're hunting for themselves for, let's say, a period of 6 weeks. But these cheetahs specifically didn't need that. They didn't need supplementary feeding, and they went off and hunted for themselves. They even caught animals as quick and as large as tetsubi. So it's definitely there, and it's just unlocking that potential in them. And there's definitely a place for this rewilding. Obviously, we've got to do this responsibly. You know, we can't be saying that we're breeding cheetahs, you know, the huge numbers for release. There's got to be a place for them. Like I said, there's got to be a place. There's a shortage of female cheetahs at the moment. So we've also got to be responsible when it comes to the rewilding process.
Just for anybody who's come into the interview midway, my guest is Derek Milburn, Project Director at We Wild Africa, which is an NGO that recently helped bring an Australian-born female cheetah over to South Africa. She is now settled in at the Mziki Game Reserve in the Northwest Province, in the process of going through a number of steps that will ultimately lead to her being fully released into the wild. Now, Derek, I know listeners listening to this will be thinking of the reverse project we've spoken about, South African cheetahs being taken to India in particular, where we are aware of the fact that several of those cheetahs have died out of the original group. And there's been a lot of concerns around whether this idea of moving these animals cross-continentally is actually going to work. I'm sure your team must be familiar with at least some of those cases. What do you know, or does it give you any pause for concern?
Yeah, so obviously we weren't really intimately involved with the process. Actually, we weren't involved at all in terms of the translocation or the rewilding or monitoring process in India. But what I can say is that even in the meta population in South Africa, you know, the meta population has pretty much tripled in numbers in South Africa. And in many places, cheetahs were lost. You know, cheetahs are susceptible to high mortality rates in southern Africa as well, in Africa in their home ranges.
Right.
And, you know, to establish a new population, there are going to be mortalities. And, you know, there's predation, there's different temperatures, there's so many different natural aspects to it, which, you know, could it in any population have an impact. So I just wanted to mention that
yeah,
it's not unheard of. But in terms of the monitoring processes that the Indian government are pursuing, I mean, they are doing their level best, I believe, to monitor the cheats on an ongoing basis. But other than that, obviously, I'm not intimately involved with the process, so I can't comment directly.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And then obviously, they were brought in from different sources from Namibia and South Africa. But I just wanted to make the point that you do get losses in cheetah. You know, even the South African cheetahs, they get predated by lions, by leopards. You know, they break legs. They're very difficult animals to manage in that way, you know.
Thank you for that. So David in particular asking, saying it sounded like a bit of a disaster. I think the message there, David, is do you remember a fairly high rate of attrition is natural in cheetah populations from what I'm hearing you say, Derek. Thank you for that. And again, just to be clear, We Wild Africa were not involved in that Indian relocation process. The project we're talking about here is bringing cheetah back into South Africa, not the reverse. You mentioned predators being one of the reasons cheetah populations take a hammering. Of course, the one good thing about where Edie has landed up, Derek, is my understanding is she'll be the first major predator on that game reserve. So what would be the possible threats to her in that space? It's not going to be the chance encounter with a lion or leopard that might take her out.
Yeah, so there's a very low density of leopards, but okay. I think that goes for any protected area where there's cheetah habitat in South Africa, really. Cheetahs are so widely dispersed. Leopards are so widely dispersed as it is. But other than that, obviously, you know, there are crocodiles on the reserve, so we were a bit concerned about that, but there are low numbers of crocodiles. But other than that, it's about giving her the best fighting chance possible to get into a wild system. And then the next step would be to bring in a male so that we can get cubs from her as quickly as possible so that we can get those unique genetics into the system. So that's quite key for us.
Yeah.
But yes, the whole reason of us putting her there in a low predator density area is to give her the best fighting chance possible. Once she's properly wilded, we can then start looking at moving her into another system where there are low densities of lions. Because, you know, we believe that if we are rewilding a cheetah, they've got to be wild, you know, and we can't be too hesitant to introduce them to lions as well.
It's just fascinating to me that natural sense of where they sort of sit in the food chain and how they identify one beast as predator and another as potential prey is still there and able to be unlocked even for a cheetah that was born in Sydney, Australia. Isn't it fantastic? Now, I know Edie had a brother cub, Dakari, I think was his name. Derek, is he still in Australia? Are there any plans for him to move?
So he's still in Australia, and Edie was specifically chosen for number one is that female cheetahs are required in the system in South Africa at the moment. Like I say, you know, we're not trying to be irresponsible and just breed cheetahs and, you know, having a much bigger supply than there is a demand. So there's got to be that balance.
Yeah.
But there is a need for females. And secondly, Edie showed a personality that she was very confident. So it's also, we try, again, the cheetahs that we do take on, we try and find the cheetahs that show the most promise in terms of their confidence levels. And she's just got a unique attitude where I'm pretty sure that she's going to do really well when she comes out of that holding enclosure.
How long does this process take, Derek? Is it a case of however long it takes her to adapt to the level that you think she's ready for the next bigger boma? Or how does it work?
Yeah, so it will basically be that, you know, when she meets certain criteria, like I say, opening carcasses on her own, managing fur. So there's a set criteria that we have. She's already been fitted with a satellite collar, so that process has already been done.
Okay.
Obviously, we've done a lot of blood work, blood tests to confirm it. She's not bringing any of the diseases into the country. You know, so there's a lot of work that goes into it. And then obviously just monitoring her now during this acclimatization process. And then from there, it's about releasing her into the system. Mziki is quite a small reserve, so, you know, it's not that we're putting her into a hunting enclosure first.
Yeah.
There's a high prey density, so she'll have lots of opportunities to learn how to hunt. And then it's very much about how quick she adapts. And once she starts hunting for herself after 6 weeks successfully without us needing to supplement her, we believe that she should be a wild cat. But again, you know, it could take, like I said, it could take a day and she hunts for herself from day one, or it might take us a bit of time to supplement her. We've got a full-time monitor with her, you know, during the wilding process. And once we feel that she no longer needs the monitor, we'll pull the monitor out and the reserve will continue managing her.
Mm-hmm.
But the satellite collars really help us find her every day and just make sure that she's okay.
Fantastic story. Derek, one of our listeners asking whether We Wild Africa works with rewilding other animals, or is it only cheetahs that are your primary focus?
No, so we believe in any animal that could possibly be rewilded, we try and put back into the system. Just as one of our projects at the moment, we actually assist the organization to the Aspinall Foundation. And just for the listeners, something really interesting is that we are currently working on rewilding 13 elephants from the United Kingdom.
Gosh.
So the Howlett's Wild Animal Park in the United Kingdom has got 13 elephants. And we believe that elephants do not belong in captivity.
Yeah.
So we're trying to reverse their process. Namibia has just sent a whole bunch of elephants to the UAE and other areas. And we believe that is absolutely uncalled for and shocking process. So we're trying to show that the process can be reversed and these elephants no longer should be in captivity. And our plan now is to bring them back to Africa. So we've partnered with the airline, which will be mentioned shortly, and we're going to fly them back to Africa. We're just finalizing the destination and the reserve, and that's where we are. So we really built the crates. We built the crates in South Africa in a flat pack form. We shipped them over to the UK, rebuilt them there, and we are now able to put all 13 elephants into the crates at once by crate training them. So we don't have to immobilize them on the day of transport. So just to give you an idea, we go from the large animals, and then we also rewilded a badger from the UK, which it was the only badger in the UK. Now, what is the point of having a single badger in captivity? It's adding no conservation value. So we brought it back to Africa and successfully released it. So we've got lots of stories like that. And to date, we obviously also specialize in translocation, so elephants, rhinos. So to date, we've translocated, rewilded, or rescued over 1,100 animals. As an example of this, in January, we removed 160 vultures in the largest ever vulture translocation ever done with Volpro. So we work with any species, whatever needs help, you know.
So then the bottom line is, if you are aware of animals in captivity that shouldn't be, or animals in need of this kind of help, Derek, one can reach out to Rewild Africa. How? Is the website the best place to visit?
Yeah, the website is definitely the best place to visit. All our details are on there or on social media. We've got a very active social media account. So Instagram, just drop us a note there. We're happy to assist. You know, we've already got a few emergencies that are on our table at the moment that we're trying to work with. But we're always happy to deal with anything that comes across from the public. And we try to provide a support service within 24 hours is what we strive to. It's not always possible considering the nature of the issue. But that's basically, we're more than happy to accept any requests.
Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for the work you're doing, more importantly. Derek Milburn speaking to us there on behalf of Rewild Africa. If you'd like to read up more about their projects, please visit their website, which is wewildafrica.com. And Derek, please keep us posted on ED's progress so we can give our listeners an update when relevant.